Discover Ag podcast is brought to you by Case IH. Case IH has solutions for every challenge, equipment for every farm. Case IH is built by farmers.
You're listening to a 58 Ember production.
Good morning, Discovering Discos. This week, we discover how a comment by the CEO of Wendy's and Kellogg sparks public commotion. The real reason so many celebrities go to In-N-Out after the Oscars, and how New York State sues JBS, the Brazilian beef giant, over climate claims.
Welcome to Discover Ag, where food meets pop culture. We're your hosts, Natalie and Tara, millennial cattle rancher and dairy farmer, and every Thursday we take you beyond the headlines to discover what's new in the world of food. And this week is the most exciting week because we are headed to South by Southwest.
I know. I went from, I don't know, 5 days ago being like, I'm so excited. This is going to be great. I'm not even stressed. To, I don't know, the last 24 hours, Luke's like, I think you're going to just explode from stress.
I literally told Daniel this morning, I think Natalie might be on a breaking point and I don't know what to do to help her.
I am on a breaking point.
I'm like, do I send her chocolate? Like, if it was me, someone buy me tacos, okay? But like, I'm like, I can't do anything to help you this far away. And don't get me wrong, I'm really stressed too. So it's not helping things. We're both stressed. But our poor husbands, can maybe someone send them flowers, chocolates?
No, don't send it to them. Send it to back to me, sending me something.
They have to deal with us right now. Daniel keeps asking me, what can I do to help? And I'm like, you asking that is making more work for me. I think that might have been my response at one point in time. But all the nerves aside, I'm actually like, I'm really excited. I think I just can't wait. I'm at the point where I just want to be there. I want to be there. I want to have my bags packed. I want to be there in Austin with you, like seeing all the excitement, like, I don't know, just all the work coming to fruition, I think is the point I'm at.
If you are a new disco, maybe we should back up and say, because a lot of discos have been on this journey for us. We actually applied to speak at South by Southwest last fall. And if you are a disco tuning in then, you are aware of that. You were along for the journey. You were part of the announcement. If you are new at disco, you're probably like, what are these, you know, lovely women talking about? Well, it is South by Southwest. This weekend is South by Southwest. On Sunday evening, Tara and I will be presenting. And yeah, we're just excited because it's obviously a huge, you know, festival event. And it's really exciting to represent agriculture and, you know, bring our two female millennial version of food and farming to the big stage. So if you guys want to tune in, our Instagrams, our social media is a really good place to follow along with us this weekend.
Yeah. And I want to say one final thing. I just want to like thank the discos, because when we first did this, there was a voting period and the discos showed up. Like, that's almost an understatement. The amount of shares, retweets, Facebook shares, Instagram stories we had about people voting for us was crazy. One of the days I sat down on the schedule and looked at like all the other people that were being voted on, we had more shares than any other speech I could find, like even ones with celebrities and things. And I sent it to you. I was like, I think I called you on the phone and was like practically in tears. It was like the disco showed up for us. So I want to say like, thank you. Like, I don't know that we'd be here without like the discos showing up in the voting stage and saying this needs to be at South by Southwest.
I mean, I'll say it once and I'll say it again. The discos are truly the best. You guys are the best. Thank you.
Now we are all looking for help to get us through cold and flu season. Is anyone else sick and tired of being sick and tired and just overall not feeling and looking our best? Well, how about a product that helps boost our immune system plus improves hair and skin radiance? Armra is a proprietary concentration of bovine colostrum that harnesses over 400 living bioactive nutrients that rebuilds the barriers of your body and fuel cellular health for a host of research-backed health benefits, including strengthening your immunity, igniting metabolism and anti-inflammation, fortifying gut health, activating hair growth and skin radiance, powering fitness, performance, and recovery, and conferring powerful anti-aging benefits. That all sounds pretty great, right? Well, it's all Armra. Natalie and I have been using and loving Armra for several months now. We have our whole families hooked too. Both Natalie and I prefer the non-flavored. I like to take it straight every morning or mix it in my girl's chocolate milk. But if we had to choose a flavor, we would recommend a watermelon vine. If you want to try Armra for yourself, go to tryarmra.com/discover or enter code DISCOVER to get yourself 15% off your first order. Again, that's tryarmra.com or click the link in our show notes and enter code DISCOVER to save some money.
All right, diving into our first article to discover this week. Headline, Wendy's clarifies no surge pricing after CEO comments spark commotion. And commotion it did indeed spark, you guys. So going back to February 15th, the CEO of Wendy's, Kirk Tanner, made a comment to investors that, quote, beginning as early as 2025, we will begin testing more enhanced features like dynamic pricing and AI-enabled menu changes, as well as suggestive selling. And then from there, I think Wendy's has pretty much just been scrambling to recover and retract everything that Mr. Kirk Tanner said.
There was just massive public outrage and scrambling is the word I come to mind. Backtracking too, just like absolutely like backtracking. One of my favorite quotes was that this will not be a surge pricing. Instead, the lady, like the PR lady, they obviously took the CEO off. They were like, stop talking, don't talk anymore. And like the PR lady came out and she was like, we actually want to use this information to make sales and like happy hours. And I was like, who just spun surge prices into like sales and happy hour? Like, I guess that was as good as it was going to get.
I did love how she like came in and tidied it up like she was a little Cinderella. Don't they call that like a cleanup person or...
Maybe. Isn't it a fixer? Isn't that what was that show? Oh, Scandal. Wasn't Scandal like a fixer?
Yeah, I think so.
For like bad stuff, not just like CEO fumbles.
Because this is an econ podcast, I do want to give a breakdown about what they're referring to, because I did Google it to just to double check. So there might be people, some discos tuning in that maybe haven't seen this headline or I'm familiar with dynamic pricing. But dynamic pricing is product pricing based on various external factors. So the price isn't set. Instead, it's influenced by things like current market demand, the season, supply changes, et cetera. And like Tara mentioned, the CEO kind of tied Duluth this into like for the restaurant business, you could think of happy hour, like where you try and get someone to come in at a different price of the time of the day for a different price. But most commonly, industries that use this are airplane tickets would be an easy one to think of, and like Uber. So that's what like they're referring to when they said that Wendy's was going to go to this model. Think like your burger could be a different price throughout the day at different times and different weeks, and it would just like, it's not set in price anymore.
Yeah, I think the airlines is such a great example. It's like around the holidays, obviously Thanksgiving, Christmas, the price is going to be higher. And then for Uber, it's like if you leave a concert, you're going to have higher prices than without it. So it's exactly that busier times are going to be more expensive.
I actually almost lost my fishizzle just the other day when I was, again, Natalie, at heightened stress. I had to make changes to our ticket to South by Southwest. And I was saying in my head, do not take it out on this poor person I'm talking to right now. But I was trying to make flight changes and they were going to ask me to pay another almost $700. And I was like, nothing is changing. I was so frustrated. I could only imagine how heated I'd be in like the drive-thru, like trying to like barter down my, you know, burger price.
So that was why people are so upset, though, is because they're like, food is a staple. Like, you have to have food to live. So while airlines and Ubers, maybe this is okay for them because you don't necessarily like have to travel or have to catch an Uber like after, you know, a concert, you have to eat. And so they felt like it was playing on that it was going to hurt low income families the most. So that was, in my mind, that was the big public outcry.
Do you think it's warranted? Like, where do you fall on this? I'm curious.
So that's a really good question. I don't know that I had even thought about it going into this, but I would say I maybe fall somewhere in the middle. I don't know. I can see why companies are trying to like get more creative. Like, I feel like margins and things in restaurant businesses aren't always great. And so they're trying to get creative on how they can, you know, obviously have better prices. And I mean, who hasn't been to a fast food restaurant when it's like jam packed and like the workers are scrambling and you can see they're like really moving it out, trying to get all the orders. And so I could see, like, in my mind, it would almost be like a tip. Like, I know it's really busy. I know this is like the busy time for you. But my issue is I don't think it'll actually like translate into like any of the workers. Like, I feel like it'll probably be the CEO that like puts the cash in his pocket at the end of the day. Oh, Maddie's weighing in. She said, as a former waitress, my tip rate better go up too. Yeah. Like, I think that is this going to be passed on to the workers who are hustling during peak hours to get things done? Probably not. So I don't know that I'm like a big stand for this.
I don't eat fast food enough probably to get upset about it right now, but I could see how maybe someone who visits a fast food restaurant all the time, like you said, would kind of be upset about this. So we're picking on Wendy's a little bit, but I want to share a fun fact or a few fun facts because not that I disliked Wendy's, but I don't think I ever gave Wendy's the credit. And after I learned a little bit more about their history and timeline, I have to say Wendy's, she's a progressive little girl. I mean, she was ahead of her time. A few fun facts. Wendy's was actually the first to instill a pickup window in 1970. It was so innovative that customers actually needed instructions on how to talk through the speaker to place an order. Wendy's was the first to add a value menu. They were the first fast food company to add a salad bar. And they were the first quick service chain with less than 1,000 restaurants to launch a national advertising campaign on TV.
I feel like during the Super Bowl, we did the Super Bowl commercials and they had one of the most famous Super Bowl commercials as well. It was like old women like beefing up their burgers or something. So yeah, shout out to Wendy's. So as we were reading this article, it kind of had me chuckling because I feel like all the CEOs are in hot water right now. Like we have the Wendy's CEO in trouble. I feel like last week we talked about someone else. And then this week, the Kellogg CEO is also getting slammed for some bad comments.
Yeah, talk about a pill of self-awareness. So it was the Kellogg CEO and he was basically advertising cereal for dinner to consumers looking for a more affordable options. And I don't know what grocery aisle he's been in lately, but I was like, I absolutely do not associate cereal and like cheap. I'm like, kids, we can't afford cereal. The cereal's too expensive.
It's too expensive for us. The headline for that one, though, had me hackling. They said, let them eat cornflakes for dinner, like on the play, a play on let them eat cake. And so I was like, wow, Maddie's in the chat saying these CEOs need PR lessons. The Kellogg's one killed me, though, because the CNBC host actually tried to kind of like encourage him to maybe stop talking. And he was like, do you think this could land the wrong way? That's what he said, a direct quote. And the CEO said, no, I think the opposite. When the host of the show is trying to make you stop, you should stop.
Subtle hint. The last thing I'll say before we move on to our next article is I learned something really interesting about the founder of Wendy's, Dave. So he actually had a really rough childhood. He dropped out of high school. But he said as he got older and his story became more well known, he worried that his business success would tell kids that they didn't need a high school diploma or high school to succeed. So to set a good example, he went back to high school and got his GED at the age of 61. And I thought it was hilarious. His graduating class voted him most likely to succeed.
That's so cute.
I know.
The final thing I'll say as our resident fast food girly, I am all about the happy hour, actually. So you mentioned you're not a person who does fast food. You guys know it. I love it. I think we need to bring happy hours to fast food. I mean, Sonic does it already, and it's pretty big motivation. So I think the other fast food restaurants looking at you, McDonald's, should step up and let's have some happy hours. As we are all becoming more conscientious of what we are putting in our bodies, we should also be looking at what we are putting on our bodies and our faces. Rolling up to my mid-30s this year, I realized I wanted to step up my skincare routine. But as I was looking for products, I wanted ingredients I believed in, like beef tallow. Enter Tubes & Co. Tubes & Co.'s entire skincare and makeup line is 100% natural and uses only organic ingredients like grass-fed tallow, aloe vera, cold-pressed olive oil, and they are committed to never using synthetic chemicals, GMOs, toxins, fillers, artificial colors, or fragrances. Tubes & Co. is a husband and wife team that believes it's not good enough for you until it's good enough for their own family. They go above and beyond to source organic products made in the United States and support small family-owned farms. I personally love a wide range of their products. From their skincare line, I love the basic beef tallow balm to the hydrating stick. And for their makeup, I love the blush and so much more. I know that Natalie uses their body wash, toner, mascara, and tons of other products. If you want to try Tubes & Co. for yourself, go to tubesandco.com, use our code DISCOVER to save yourself some money, or click the link in our show notes and use code DISCOVER.
All right, diving into our second article to discover this week. Headline, here's the real reason so many celebrities go to In-N-Out Burger after the Oscars. So apparently, discos, the theme for today with our articles is fast food. Or maybe it's B.
My favorite.
Given our last article. But either way, as Tara just said, this article is a fun little one out of the news that combines Tara's love for fast food with my love for fashion. And it talks about two different reasons that the celebs venture to the famous burger joint after the Oscars.
And not just the Oscars, like the Golden Globes, the Screen Actors Guild, People's Choice. Like, apparently everyone is hitting up In-N-Out after these shows. And the first thing it opened with was because the shows can have really unpredictable food. Like, one day it can be Nobu sushi, and then the next it is like a bagged pizza. And I can just imagine like showing up thinking you're getting Nobu and you get pizza in a bag, and like vice versa. If you showed up thinking you were getting pizza and you got sushi, you would be so unhappy.
I was also thinking about glam teams too. Like, if it wasn't a good meal you had at the whatever event show it was, think about how long some of the celebrities are getting ready for the day. Like, it's not like they're, you know, putting on their outfit and their makeup and their hair an hour before the show. Like, they're in full glam sessions from probably, I would imagine, very early on in the day. And yes, I'm sure they're getting like fed and whatnot, but I just imagine through all of that, by the time it does come to eat, like in the evening, if it wasn't a good meal, you would be like, I'm starving.
Not to compare us to celebrities, but we have actually a really early morning the day we speak at South by Southwest because we have a glam team coming in. And so I hope you're ready for that. Like, we are starting, I think it's 6 a.m. my time, so that's 7 a.m. your time. So that won't be like very bad for you because you're an early riser. But yeah, I mean, we're going to be like basically like celebrities on Sunday.
Basically. I mean, it's going to be so easy to confuse us. So moving into how you mentioned in the article's title that all these celebs are going to In-N-Out after the different shows, they called out a couple of ones that have posted specifically to their social media channel. So Julia Roberts, Reese Witherspoon, Rita Wilson. I could never say this person's name. Is it Priyanka Chopra?
Yeah, I think that's how you say it.
I feel like that's when you're getting old. One, there were celebrities I did not recognize the name. I was like,
there was a lot of celebrities, and I was like, I don't know who that is.
That is, yeah. I'm like, I think I'm my mom. I've literally turned into my mom at this point.
I'm old. It's done. We're done. Put us out to pasture.
Yeah.
I know. Can you imagine sitting in an In-N-Out like on a Friday night? You know, maybe it's a late night snack after, you know, a round of partying, and you walk in and there is like Reese Witherspoon sitting there in her full glam. Like, can you even imagine that?
No, I would absolutely die. I think the juxtaposition would be too much for me. It was funny because one tweet that is kind of going viral most recently was an actor I didn't know, Paul Giamatti. But he was just a couple of weeks ago after his winning the Golden Globes, he was seen at In-N-Out Burger and was posted on Twitter. And one of the comments I was laughing so hard at because they said, and look at the awards just chilling on the table. Like, he was just mowing down. The award was sitting there, and there was a ton of people in the background just eating their meals. I mean, it was so bizarre.
Yeah, that guy, he won Best Actor, and he said, wow, guys, I didn't think my week could get any better than going viral for eating a cheeseburger. And yeah, the award sitting, there's another one where it is like a selfie of a customer with a different actor who had the award in his hand while he was ordering. And then, yeah, it's just like crazy to think about. I will say Julia Roberts kind of like copped out. Her picture is like from inside the car. And I'm like, it is very different going through the drive-through than going into the restaurant.
Well, so thinking about these celebs in the restaurant made me think two things. One, do you think In-N-Outs have, especially after this article, do you think they'll have an issue with like fans trying to go there specifically just to get like a celeb sighting?
I was literally wondering that because I'm not going to lie. There was like a little piece of me that was like, okay, cool. If I am in LA, which I don't know when the last time I was even in LA.
Putting it in your journal.
Yeah. Add that to my calendar. But I would be like, I mean, if I was close, I probably would be like, let's go. Where is the nearest In-N-Out from the Golden Globes? Like, I would probably be camped out.
The second question made me think of, if you did see someone, I always love to know this. Is there a celeb you would like stop and get a picture, an autograph from? Like, is there a celeb you love that much you would go up to? Or do you just like the idea of like kind of seeing them? Like, where do you fall in that camp?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like there's a couple celebs I would probably go up to. I feel like in this situation, I actually was thinking about this. I feel like if you just won this award and you are choosing to go into In-N-Out, I would guess you're like excited and like wouldn't mind people coming up to you. Like, right, you just won an award because people went and saw your movie. Like, not saying that you like owe it to them. That is not how I feel about celebs. But you are also choosing to put yourself in a very, very public setting after, like, and you're going to show up completely glam, right? Like, you're going to get stopped. So I feel like in that situation, I probably would. Like, if Reese Witherspoon walked into In-N-Out, I would. Yeah, I would probably go up to her. I feel like maybe some of the others that were listed on this, I don't know if I would. I think I'd have to be a pretty big stan to like go up to them, but I think this would be the moment to do it. How do you feel? What would you do? Would you be like cool as a cucumber?
I think so. I don't feel like I would get...
I like disagree with that. I feel like it depends who it was.
I was just going to say... I feel like in general, I don't think I would get starstruck very easily, because I think a big thing for me is I recognize and understand that an actor is playing a role. And so like, I don't think I have obsession with actors in the way some people do, is because I'm like, that, like, that's a role. That's not who that person is in real life. And so I think to see some of people, I just don't know if I would like have that connection with them. There is one person I'm sure, actually two people I think I would stop. One, I'm sure... you can guess who it is.
Drum roll, please. It is Micro.
Yes, absolutely. And that's because I like know him as a person. Like, I don't like him being a celebrity. I like him.
Right. He's not playing a part. Like, he's him, and you genuinely love like who he shows up. I will say, I feel like the celebrities I would probably be more excited about would be the same. Like, that you've gotten to actually know like them. Like, they maybe so on like show up on social media. And I'm not saying they couldn't still be acting, but I feel like you, I don't know. There is a difference when you feel like you maybe know a celebrity on a more deeper level.
Well, and so that's the funny thing.
I know that sounds like so stupid to say, but
I was going
to
say, because the second person I would stop, I feel like I know, but I don't. But it's Paige DeSorbo. Like, I feel like I listen to her podcast.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. I know you so well.
I'm so predictable. So predictable. but I listen to her podcast every week. And so I do feel, I'm like, that would be rude if I didn't go up to Paige.
That would be like me like seeing a friend at In-N-Out and not stopping and saying hi. Like, that's...
Absolutely. I mean, compliment her bangs. Tell her dress is pretty. Like, if I knew a disco was out and saw me and we didn't talk and get to meet, I would be upset. So I feel like, I don't know. Anyway.
I agree. Back to the article.
Yes. So I think it is fascinating. Getting into this idea, which is what the whole article is about, is that In-N-Out has made an environment, right? They have made something about the cheeseburger convey like immense cultural, almost capital and clout. And I'm like, how have they done that? Because I feel like when a business can do that, create this like desire to go there, make you feel like you're a part of something, they've like hit the jackpot. And I feel like that's what In-N-Out has done. And that's why these celebs go there.
No. So Jimmy Kimmel actually had a quote that he said, the award show tradition is In-N-Out after the show. I think it's part of why people are here in LA. One of the things on their to-do list or their to-go list is In-N-Out. And so there are a lot of people that come to LA for the Oscars. So they're like, yeah, let's all go to In-N-Out after this big award show. And my favorite quote of his was, nothing against McDonald's, but award show night is In-N-Out night. And I agree. Like, it's not just going to any fast food restaurant. It's going to like the pop culture icon that is In-N-Out.
Well, I mean, even going back to when you and I were just in California together last month, we said we should go to In-N-Out, and we did go to In-N-Out, and I felt like it was like a thing. Like, there was other options we had gone to. I mean, we even went to, you took me to Sonic because I had never been to Sonic before, and I didn't feel the same way about going to Sonic as I did about going to In-N-Out with you.
Another thing about this is it's not just like going to In-N-Out afterwards. Actually, Vanity Fair has an iconic Academy Awards after party, and it is routinely hosted by In-N-Out. So the In-N-Out food truck shows up and everyone gets In-N-Out. Like, Vanity Fair is, I mean, you could be serving like caviar and steaks and oysters, and they're serving In-N-Out. Like, it's such a moment. Do you know where else they served In-N-Out at?
Oh, no.
We served it at our wedding.
Oh, at your wedding. Yes.
Oh, yes.
You're so on par.
So on par. I think we had only, I think we had like 180. I almost said we only had an 180, and I realized that is not a small number. But where our guest list started at, 180 was small. But I think we ordered over 200 In-N-Out cheeseburgers. This was before In-N-Out had the food truck that they have now that you can like rent. So we had to just pick up 200 In-N-Out cheeseburgers. And the fact that they make them one by one now gives me a new appreciation for the fact that we ordered 200 of them. And I'm not kidding when I say every single cheeseburger was eaten. They got delivered, I think, at like 11 o'clock at night. Every single one was gone.
We did the same thing. We did pizza. So I thought we were cool, but now I feel a little lame that we had pizza and you had In-N-Out.
Weren't you in like Minnesota?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was not going to happen for you.
I actually have two more things I want to say. So one, I learned a really cool fun fact about In-N-Out. And I'm wondering if you knew this, but when you go through the drive-thru In-N-Out, or I guess just look at the outside of it, there are usually, for a majority of the places, crisscrossed palm trees planted outside of it. And there's a reason why. The founder, Harry Snyder's favorite movie is It's a Mad, Mad World. And in that movie, it featured characters racing to find treasure buried under four palm trees planted to resemble the letter W. So Harry started a new tradition where you plant crossed palm trees in front of his In-N-Out locations. I thought that was so cool. So the next time you're going, look to see if there's the palm trees.
Yeah, they're I've never seen one that doesn't have the palm trees. There's some really cool facts about In-N-Out. Actually, that's what I want to close with, is I have some fun facts about In-N-Out that are actually kind of farming related. So I thought I'd bring them to the pod if you don't have anything else.
Well, I do have one thing.
Okay. Do you want to end with it, or you want to end with my fun facts?
Well, we'll end with your fun facts, because I'm a little distraught. We just talked about Wendy's, and I shared that Wendy's, you know, made the drive-through the legendary thing that it is. That's what the Wendy's website says.
Yeah, but In-N-Out claims that too.
Yes. And I'm like, you can't believe anything on the internet, you guys. This goes to show. It's what
I can't believe we're covering so many drive-through burger places today. I'm like slightly embarrassed for us, but it's also, I don't know. I'm also like totally a stand for it.
So anyway, it's up for discussion that, you know, who I think are. I think Wendy's is saying it because it was actually a drive-through, and In-N-Out is saying it because they had the speaker box. And so technically they're both right, but I just don't feel right about it.
Mm. It's like the Billy the Kid debate. If you live in the Southwest, everyone claims that that's where Billy the Kid was shot and is buried. Literally every town between Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and they all have some story and some piece of the story that is different than everyone else's. Like, apparently Wendy's and In-N-Out are doing the same thing. Okay, my last fun facts about In-N-Out is they are actually super picky about their beef, and it cannot be frozen. Like, so In-N-Out does not have any freezers, any microwaves, any pre-prepared food at all. So they're really picky about where they get their beef from. So a lot of the companies that like package beef, which are called packers, will not pick them up as clients. And so when they moved out to Dallas, one of the issues was is they were too far from their California location to be able to get the beef there not being frozen. And so a packer that is just like 45 miles down the road from me, it is a pretty big packer, but it is not one of the big ones like JBS we're going to talk about next. They actually picked them up. And so I don't know, I just think that's like so cool. And they have Daniel toured that packing plant, and they talked about like some of the requirements In-N-Out has, and like how every fast food chain has different requirements, but In-N-Outs are really strict. And then all of their iceberg lettuce is hand leaf. They cook their burgers, like I mentioned, one at a time, fresh to order, which is a big difference because when we talked about McDonald's, they cook 8 burgers at a time. So kind of interesting, some differences there. And then the final fact, potatoes are actually shipped directly from the farm straight to the In-N-Out, and then each In-N-Out hand cuts all of the French fries.
We really do need to give it to In-N-Out. They do. They're doing the most. I hate scrubbing potatoes. Could you imagine if that was your job?
Have you ever seen them? They throw them in that machine and they're like, wha-bam! And then they like, I mean, it's not get in the way of the potato smasher dude or whatever, cutter dude.
That is true. They probably do like commercially wash it. I was thinking about some poor employee that's like walking into work that day, like scrubbing, you know, 500 potatoes.
I'm like doing the motion as people cannot see. Sorry. But yeah, they have their like washcloth. They're like cleaning potatoes. I don't know. I just thought that was like a fun little ag fact of like how close it is. Like we could go on. There's like ones about the dairy and the cheese. Like they're really, really intense just about how they source things, from what farms they source it from. So I feel like while it is like, you know, the hype is there, I think the hype is there for a reason on In-N-Out.
All right, diving into our last and final article to discover this week, headline, New York State sues JBS, the Brazilian beef giant, over its climate claims. So this one is out of the New York Times, and it is not the first time we have talked about JBS or the first time we have talked about climate change, but it is the first time we are talking about JBS being sued over climate change claims. So recently, the New York Attorney General Letitia James sued JBS USA, so the American arms of JBS. And if you're unfamiliar, JBS is the world's largest beef packer and the second largest food company in the world. And she is accusing the company of making misleading statements about its efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
A few facts about JBS. They are responsible for 22% of the U.S. beef supply, and about 70% of its revenues actually come from U.S. operations. So it is substantial. And actually, I think that might be where I want to start. I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but maybe you should give like just a brief background on like what is JBS? Like, how is it different than like, I don't know, a ranch? Like, I feel like when we think about beef, we just are like, the beef supply system. Like, nobody breaks it down into the fact there is like very different sectors along the way.
Yeah, that is one thing that is really unique about the beef industry compared to other animal proteins like chicken or pork. I think a lot of us just, we talk about animal proteins and we lump them
even
together.
Dairy is totally different than all of you guys.
For sure. So the beef industry is one of the most segmented industries. A lot of the other ones are kind of, I mean, we talked about this a little bit in our interview last week when we had on, you know, the poultry, like Tyson owns from beginning of the egg until the very end. When people talk about JBS, because they'll talk about JBS with like the big four. And I do think they're, I mean, like, listen, I'm not a JBS fan. Let me put that out there right now. But I do think sometimes when we talk about JBS, people assume that like JBS has their hands like on my ranch. And that's absolutely not true. Like, the beef industry is very segmented. You know, it's the cattle start at a ranch like mine, and then they get bought and sold to, you know, a feedlot, and they get bought and sold to JBS. Like, there's different steps in the supply chain for a cow where the animal is physically bought and sold multiple times. And that is very, very different than, again, like speaking about last week's with the chicken. And so JBS plays a role at the very, very end. As we've said a couple times now, they are the packers. They are, you know, buying the animal at the very end, packaging it up. That's their role. And there's only four of them. So they kind of dominate, as you can tell by size. I mean, they're massive.
Yeah, you said they're the world's largest meat producer. They're ranked actually in the 700s in the global 2000 list as the world's largest company. Like, this is not just big in ag. This is big worldwide, which is absolutely crazy, because in 1953, that is when JBS was founded, and they processed just 5 head of cattle a day. So in what, 75 years, to go from processing 5 cattle a day to being one of the 700th largest companies in the entire world is, I don't know that you can wrap your head around that kind of growth.
No, I didn't even know that statistic. That is so crazy.
It was on JBS's website, so yeah. Take it with a sprinkle of PR salt.
Again, going back to, you can't believe everything you read on the internet. I think that's what Abe Lincoln said.
I did see it, and yeah, he definitely did. Abe Lincoln was giving good internet advice back in the day. I did see it in multiple spots, but that is where I first saw it, and I was like, that feels very PR to me, but I think it actually was true.
So getting into the actual citing incidents, Mrs. James cited there were several different instances in recent years when the company claimed it was on the path to becoming net zero, because that's what this is over. They're pledging to be net zero by 2040. And she said, she called out several different times that they have made misleading statements about that. One occurred during an onstage interview with the company's global chief executive. Another one was during a live interview with The Times. Another one was during a 2050 industry presentation. They called out a full-page ad that JBS placed in the Times in 2021. And then they also called out statements that they currently have on the company's websites as well.
I think it's also worth noting that right now JBS is pursuing a listing on the New York Stock Exchange. So there's a lot of eyes on them. There's a lot of scrutiny going on. I mean, there always is a lot of eyes, I feel like, on the big four packers in recent years. And when I say recent years, probably actually more like the last 10 plus years. But obviously, if you're going to be listed on the New York Stock Exchange, things are going to be even higher. So the company has actually said now that they're thinking about delaying that until the second half of 2024, just because this is not going well right now, to say the least. belief.
I wonder if the Kellogg's or CEO would like have that kind of self-awareness, or if he'd be like, no, things are actually going really great.
No, that people really want to hear this from me, actually.
Yeah. So Miss Letitia, Mrs. James, she is not the only one that is kind of like, she's not the first one to call out JBS. JBS's claims that it would be able to achieve zero emissions was also deemed misleading by the National Advertising Review Board, or the NARV board, earlier. And even beyond that, the NAD, which is the National Advertising Division, and the IATP, which is the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy, has also had an issues and made, you know, these claims regarding JBS's statements as misleading.
This is also not the first time that JBS is like in hot water with governments. I mean, they have been had to pay like billions of dollars in different lawsuits in 2017 for bribing officials in Brazil. In 2008, JBS announced that it was buying National Beef Packing in the United States, and that deal actually fell through because of issues like competition issues here in the United States. So, I mean, there's a long list before even getting into just climate issues of JBS having lawsuits.
Yeah, nobody likes JBS except JBS, probably. You know, like
JBS and PETA need to go hang out. They need to like talk to each other. Nobody likes you but you.
And again, I'm not team JBS, but the first thing I thought when I read this was like, it's not 2040 yet. So like, how can you sue over claims to be climate neutral in 2040 when it's not even 2040? Like, that really stuck out to me. I don't know. Did you?
Yeah, so I don't like know JBS's specifics. Nobody there has consulted me on this, but I'm going to give like my professional, I don't know, opinion on it or whatever of what I've seen of other companies. So we've talked about greenwashing a lot. I think this is something companies are going to start running into that have made these big claims. And I think they have to be really careful moving forward making these claims. So there is going to start being put benchmarks in place. And I know even like dairy has a goal of being carbon neutral by 2050. And we have had to set goals now, inner rim goals that show like, okay, we have reduced by this much by this year. And other companies are having to start doing the same. And so if you can't reach those benchmarks, it shows like you're never going to make it to 2040 and be carbon neutral if you're JBS. And so my guess is something about that. Like I, again, like obviously not privy to that information online, but I'm going to guess they're not meeting their benchmarks, or by just like a general calculation, there's no way they can get there.
Well, so there was one article I was reading that said that. They said that even if, because there was one article claiming, like you said, that they actually didn't have a strategy. But another article I was reading said that even if JBS had developed a plan, the company couldn't feasibly, quote, you know, quote, feasibly deliver on this climate commitment. But I was like, can you sue? Like, because it's kind of like they're like suing over like, we don't believe in you, JBS.
Okay, where I actually have an issue with this. So I feel like everyone maybe wants to know, like, so are you for JBS or against it? And I don't know that I like am for JBS or against it. So like, don't come for me for that. Like, I think there's problems within our supply system. We also got here for a reason. But what I did not like about some of the statements from JBS is they definitely were like using farmers and ranchers in their marketing. And let me like expand on that a little bit. Like they said that agriculture will be a part of the climate solution. And I absolutely believe that. I believe agriculture will be a part of the climate solution. And the attorney general like clung onto that statement and was like, JBS is not going to be a part of the climate solution. And what I was frustrated about is I was like, no, agriculture as in farmers and ranchers will be a part of the solution, because it goes back to a quote from someone we interviewed probably a year or more ago on this podcast, Dr. Von Holder, who said the only industries in the entire world that can actually have the ability to pull carbon out of the air is forestry and agriculture. So that is us. I mean, that's not JBS packaging meat, but it is your ranch that is sequestering carbon in the sand hills of Nebraska.
I am dying. It's like we shared notes, but we did not share notes, because I wrote down the same thing. My biggest issue with this is that people will see that they made claims how agriculture is part of the solution, and then the rebuttal is, you know, JBS is lying, and they'll put the two and two together and think that the ag industry is lying about our solution. And like you said, my mind instantly went back to the interview we had with Dr. Holder. I mean, we literally wrote down the same notes. Like, for me, this issue isn't actually about JBS. You know, I think JBS is going to, like we said, they've been in the news all the time. They're going to get in trouble. If it isn't for this, it's another thing another day. And if they get around this, they'll get caught later. Like, my issue isn't with JBS, although like I do think obviously things need to be done. My big issue with this is like, how is this going to reflect on the perception moving forward of everyone's idea of how ag can play a role in being part of the solution?
Mic drop. That's it. Like, that's exactly like the issue that I have, that this whole thing rubs me the wrong way. The CEO was quoted as saying, "We will continue to work with farmers and others." I'm like, that's how you're planning on reaching carbon neutral, is you are planning on having farms and ranches like be carbon neutral, because the ag industry actually as a whole here in the United States is actually already a carbon sink. We remove more carbon than we put into the atmosphere, and you're going to ride on those good coattails while at the exact same time, like, giving us a black eye of being this like massive conglomerate international company. Like, I'm kind of like, you can't have it both ways, JBS. You can't have your cake and eat it too.
I think JBS can have their cake and eat it too, unfortunately.
They can.
But we're going to stop.
They're eating their cheeseburger, their beef, their heaven. They're eating everything. Chicken wings, whatever they want to eat.
Oh, so as always, you guys, we love to get your guys' disco opinion. If you have any thoughts on today's different articles from, you know, Wendy's and Kellogg CEO to In-N-Out to JBS, let us know over on the Discover Ag. We actually changed it. Discover Ag Podcast is now our Instagram handle. So find us over there. Let us know what you guys are thinking. And don't go anywhere, because Tara is about to introduce. We have an interview coming up.
Yeah, well, we are done covering articles, as we do occasionally. We now have an interview following our article. So don't go anywhere. Today, we are actually interviewing Brian Spencer, who is a hay and forage marketing manager with Case IH. We actually recorded this episode live from the Case IH booth at the World Ag Expo in Tulare, California last month. And Brian shared some fascinating information about the technology Case IH is implementing on their tractors to really help farmers. So if you are a tractor person, technology person, you're going to want to stick around for this next interview. We are joined with Brian today. Thank you so much for coming on, joining the Discover Ag Podcast, joining our live Case IH morning show, and talking with us today all about Baylor Automation.
I'm glad to be here.
Why don't we start off with hearing a little bit more about yourself and your role with Case IH?
Sure. Brian Spencer. I'm the hay and forage marketing manager for Case IH North America. Been with the company. This is my 28th year.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations. Yeah. Where are you located out of?
I'm out of Wisconsin. I'm out of the
office. Fellow Midwest that was transplanted here into California to hold our own.
Originally from Indiana. Family farm is down there. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you for telling us a little bit about yourself. So we are here, obviously, at the World Ag Expo. We've been talking about how many different pieces of equipment are on site at our booth here at Case IH. You guys have a ton, but one of them is the Baylor Automation. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So it's a new feature available for our large square balers. Autonomy, automation has been
all the rage.
Been the buzzword for several years now. So what we're launching is a new concept, not using new technology, using existing technology. We've had some form of automation on our balers for several years now. On the round baler side, we've had a form of tractor baler automation where once the bale is made, the baler will actually stop the tractor, apply the net wrap, open and close the tailgate, ejecting the bale, and the operator didn't touch a thing. So no clutching, no braking, no grabbing a hydraulic remote. So on large squares, we've had a form of automation called feed rate control, where the baler controls the speed of the tractor based on the amount of material coming into the baler. This new feature that we're launching this year is next level, next generation. It's hands-free baling. So guidance, essentially. Guidance has been accepted in agriculture for several years, right? For tillage, planting, spraying, harvesting, and so forth. Not so much with baling, because the satellite doesn't know where the windrow is. You know, it's not using, you know, okay, I got to get over 60 feet because that's my next pass. The windrow could be anywhere based on how many times it was touched or merged or so forth. So we're using or introducing LIDAR technology on the baler. LIDAR stands for light detection and ranging.
So before we get into the LIDAR, I do want to ask you, you've obviously been walking around showing people, getting people's reaction when having these conversations here. What has been people's reaction to the new automation?
They kind of scratch their heads for a minute. And like, wow, that'd be great. You know, I can get in here and, you know, let go of the steering wheel and I got other things I can be doing. Phone's always ringing. I got, you know, my monitor's going on here. I can handle more of my farm business while the tractor's doing its own thing.
I do think we've come a long way with the idea of technology. And, you know, I think sometimes we can be a little maybe against it at the beginning. And then when we start realizing how beneficial it can be, it's like, sign me up. You know, where can we get this for our operation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the whole thing 15, 20 years ago when we started talking about yield monitors and guidance and stuff, it was like, I'll never do that. And now it's like they hop in a tractor and it's like, I would never get drive a tractor without guidance.
Well, and know? One of the things we actually talked about yesterday with Nick was, you know, labor. And so you're saying that farmers can then be in their tractor. They can essentially be doing two things at one time. They can be running their tractor, but also like handling the business side of the farm, whether it's answering the phone or calling people or whatever else they need to be doing. And so that is like a really amazing thing when you think about kind of some of our labor issues.
Yeah. So with this feature, what it allows an operator to do, it basically takes the operator out of the bale making process. So you can put a less experienced operator, a less confident operator in the cab of that tractor, and he's going to be more productive, more bales per hour, more bales per day. So your cost per bale goes down. A seasoned veteran is going to jump in that and just let go of the steering wheel and he's going to have a great day.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a great day.
Yeah. So the LIDAR technology, light detection and ranging, it's not new technology. It's a new application for it. They're using LIDAR technology and topography. They're discovering new cities in the jungles of South America using LIDAR. So the sensor mounts on top of the cab of the tractor and it shoots lasers in front of the tractor. And it measures the position and volume of the hay. And it's going to steer according to the position of the hay. And then the feed rate control is going to control the speed of the tractor. So, you know, if you've got pivots, you're just constantly going around a circle, hey, let go of the steering wheel. If you got a lot of crooked fields or something, let go of the steering wheel and it's going to find a...
So is this something that could be attached to any tractor and baler, or is it fit for specific ones, or like how does that look for producers?
Well, most of our large square balers are pulled by the larger tractors. So yeah. It has to have the steering control, the implement steering control available. So it'd be like our Pumas, Optums, Magnums, and so forth.
And it is for just square bales.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, it'll work on any of our balers since about 2020 on the high density side and since about 2022 on our regular balers.
That's really cool though. It can be like added to, you know, your newer models that you have already out there. Like
yeah.
Added to
yeah.
your existing system.
It's just a parts kit that we'll install on top of the tractor and then, you know, wire it up and you're good to go.
Yeah. Cause I mean, conversation everywhere, anywhere, anytime is always going to be like input costs, you know, right? Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about this on our podcast when it comes to like progression and advancement and the things we're requiring and asking of our farmers, you know, to, you know, whether it's like increase yields or like to be more sustainable in a lot of different ways. A lot of times we have to think about that input cost with the return. And this sounds like a really pretty easy way for a farmer to like step into this change for their operation.
Yeah, especially with an inexperienced operator, right?
Yeah. You know,
so labor's tough. Find somebody that's got any experience is really tough. So if he's less capable or less confident, right? This baler's going to take over and we're going to drop very consistent bales as far as length and weight. So that's better for handling, loading the trailer, stacking in the barn, retail opportunities. If every bale's the same length, the same weight, you know, that's great. Feed ration mixing. If every bale's the same weight every time, very close, I can just drop it in the TMR and go. So,
yeah. So in addition to the LIDAR, what other technology can we see coming out of the baler automation?
Well, with the telematics that we've got on board the tractor, what that allows us to do is to pull the data out of the baler, all the bale drop data, send it up to the cloud. And then we can manage that through our AFS Connect portal with our phone, our tablet, our desktop. So at the end of the day, I could go in and see that field. What did my operators do today? I can go to this field. I can see all the bales. I can click on a single bale. It'll tell me what time it was baled, how much it weighed, what the moisture was, how many flakes were in it. Then at the end of the day, I can roll that all up and see, you know, I've got 242 bales in this field I got to go chase. I can call my broker. Hey, here's what I've got for sale. Here's my total tonnage. You know, what are you going to give me? I know who I have to send to the field to go pick that up, how many trips I'm going to have to make to pick that up. So
my husband, when we had the Magnum on site this fall when we were planting, he got to play. I say play around with the AFS Connect because when he was showing it to me, I was like, yeah, this feels like a video game a little bit. Like it felt very like technology savvy, but he was having a ton of fun with it, of being able to see exactly what it could do and just how much information it can give you, you know, at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. One of the operators we were running with this summer in Eastern Idaho. So he had three large square balers. We had the one with the LIDAR that we were running, and they had two in the field that didn't have the LIDAR. So with the AFS Connect, what he could do, he had an additional monitor wired up in the cab that was mirroring those other balers in the field. So he didn't have to pay attention to the steering because the tractor was doing that for him. So he could follow those other balers in the field, make sure everything was working well and see what was going on and managing his operation, right? So,
well, and just going back to progress too, I mean, in order to make any of these advancements, like data is so important. We need the data, you know, to, like Tara talked about how fun it is for us to go out there and to see the numbers. But like at the end of the year too, when you go to like crunch and return and like make, you know, decisions for the next year, it's so important that you have all that data that you can start making like better informed decisions on for your operation too.
True. It's the information age, you know, whether we're going to use it or not, people want that data.
Yeah, they want it all.
You know, I just want to see it. You know, I'm never going to use it again, but gosh, I want to see it today.
I know. I was thinking that when you were talking about some of the capabilities, I thought, oh gosh, that sounds a little intimidating. And then I remember, you know, we have a pretty big area producer around us who does a lot of farming. And I like to bring my littles. I have, you know, three boys, a boy, a mom, and I have two pretty young ones. And so I like to kind of bring them out and ride along with him. And I remember stepping in one of his, you know, higher, more expensive tractors and just being like, this is what you operate every day. Like farmers do not get enough credit for how technologically advanced they probably have to be nowadays to run a lot of the equipment.
Yeah. And some of these features, you know, people get intimidated, but sometimes it's just a simple on and off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like this baler automation. It is not hard to use.
Just restarted, you know, like reboot.
So getting into the Magnum, you know, the brand new 2023 Magnum. And yeah, you're seeing all this technology. It feels like you're almost like in a jet. And at the exact same time, you still had the bunny and you know, like the fast flow.
Rabbit, turtle.
Like, very obvious there.
Yeah, people don't realize how complicated it is, but sometimes how easy it can be.
Right.
Well, and I think that's one of the things about Case IH. Like, you guys stand for the fact that Case IH is built by farmers. And I think that goes into exactly this conversation as well. There is a lot of technology. It's built by people who understand what farmers are looking for, who are farmers themselves and are actually using it. So it's done right.
Yeah, it's so true. You go to a farm show and talk to our people on the lot and how many of us grew up on a farm, whose family operations still farm, who still farm with their families, but also work for Case IH. I mean, our families farm hundreds of thousands, of millions of acres a year. We raise thousands of cattle. My family farms in South Central Indiana. My brothers run the farm. So, you know, I hear it all the time. You know, I'm the black sheep of the family. I went to the corporate world, so they run the farm. But, you know, I hear exactly what's going on. So we walk the walk and we talk the talk. And another interesting thing about Case IH, 2/3 of our employees are field-based. We're not in some office in some downtown somewhere. That puts us closer to our dealers, closer to our customers, whether it's credit or support or just, you know, anything out there. We've got the people in the field.
I love that statistic. Thank you for sharing it. And I was going to say, thinking back, we've had the opportunity to interview a lot of different Case IH family members, experts on the podcast. And I think every single one of them, I think it's 100% right. Every single one of them has come from agriculture.
Yep. And still has that family tie, like you said, whether it's a, you know, an uncle, a brother, you know, somebody is still in the farm that gives you that direct access. And then talking about the location, I mean, yeah, our Case IH dealer is, you know, a couple miles down the road, like just being able to just pop in there, even in our small town, and be able to talk with them is just so valuable.
Getting back to baler automation, if you guys are at home and you have questions about this, please feel free to drop them. We're going to try and ask a couple more specific ones here. But if there's anything top of mind for you that you're curious about, please feel free to put them in the comments and the Case IH team will get back to you. But I am curious, a lot of producers are going to be wondering, like, what challenges does this baler automation solute? What solutions do they provide to the challenges they're facing?
Productivity, you know, with the feed rate control turned on, most operators are going to, when they bail, they're just going to set a speed and forget it. You know, if I see a thin area of the windrow, I'm just going to not do anything. I'm just going to let it go through there. With the feed rate control, controlling the speed, you set a maximum speed, you know, for easy, we'll say it's 10 miles per hour. And that baler is going to push that tractor to get to that 10 mile an hour whenever it has the chance to, based on the amount of material coming in. So you're going to, your bale productivity per hour per day goes up. So your cost per bale goes down. The consistency of the bales is going to drop. Is greatly improved. So there's a lot behind the scenes that, you know, most people don't understand, you know, other than just having a good day in the tractor, because I'm not steering.
Yeah. So I asked you what people's reaction here at the farm show was, but what are some of the reactions from farmers using this? What are some of the testimonials could we maybe hear about what people think of it?
Yeah. So the operators that ran it this summer were very impressed, and they mirrored everything that I said. You know, I had other balers in the field, and with this on, the tractor was actually producing more bales per hour per day. And so it just made for a more comfortable day. You know, I'm not fighting the steering wheel. You know, oh, I got to get over here. I got to get over here, because, you know, there's also sensors inside the baler to tell me to steer left or right to make sure that it's filling properly. So I got to pay attention to that. I got to pay attention to where the hay is. I got to pay attention to the speed. Oh, here's a clump, you know, a heavy low spot in the field where the hay was thicker. So I got to slow down. Baler takes that and does it all for them.
So. You mentioned you guys trialed it in Idaho. Did you say an Idaho producer was trialing it? Yeah. Where else did you guys, was it kind of some different areas?
Yep. Yeah. It's been in development. We go through a validation process. You know, we got to test it in multiple conditions in multiple countries and continents and stuff. So, you know, if it's winter here, it's summer in Australia. We're bailing down there. So it goes through a rigorous testing to make sure it's going to work right.
Well, I am sure you have piqued the interest of a lot of people watching. I know I'm super interested. I feel like this is some really incredible technology. So for people who want to learn more, want to go dive even deeper, where should they go?
Visit your dealer or go to caseih.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian, so much for joining us.
It was
a pleasure to talk with you.
This has been a 58 Ember production. For more shows, please visit the 58 Ember channel, 58ember.com, or find us at 58ember Media on socials.